We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to hear on the program to have once again Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. He's currently the interim head of the Department of Journalism. And for quite a long time, every once in a while, he stopped by and we talk about photography. He's been a photographer for a long time. He was a newspaper photographer, worked for a number of years for the News Gazette newspaper, and teaches photojournalism. And we talk about how things change in photography, and we certainly talked a lot about over the years about the move from film to digital. So if you have questions, maybe you're thinking about buying a camera, and you are confused by the options, and maybe you'd like to have a little bit of advice on how to think about it, we can do that. Maybe you have some photographic task or project you need to do and you're just not sure how to do it, we can do that. Or maybe what you just want to do is when you take snapshots on when you're on trips or on family occasions, you just want to do whatever you can do to get the best picture that you can. So any and all of that, whatever level you're at, whether you're still shooting film or whether you've moved on to digital, any and all of that is certainly fine. And I know Brian will see if he can help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. That's the toll free line. So if it would be a long distance call for you, we'll pay for the call. Use that. And we are now also taking questions by email, so you can do that. will-talk@illinois.edu. There, it could just help us if you can try to keep the questions brief. Other than that, you're certainly welcome to call. Hey, thanks very much.
Glad to be here. Yeah, it's always fun.
One thing I was just kind of curious about, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, now over these many years, we've talked about the move to digital photography. And back when we first started, digital cameras were very expensive, and they were mostly used by professional photographers. And the advantage was you could take a picture and then you could electronically transmit it back to your paper, your magazine, whatever, and like that,
yeah,
the picture's back at
right.
the office.
Well, no, actually. Well,
oh.
I mean, yes,
well,
now.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Now. And it's been so long that it's easy to forget that it wasn't so much that it was going to be transmitted back, but as you physically transmit it back to the publication, then there wasn't all the processing and all that. And it's really only been fairly recently that you can transmit back, but that is one of the newest technologies that professionals are using, where I was just at a conference where there are some chains out there that are saying that if you get to a news site and you haven't transmitted pictures back within 3 minutes of getting there.
That is, your bosses are saying to you, you're
yeah.
there 3 minutes, I want pictures.
I want pictures, yeah. And so, you know, and even in the, again, older days, which meant like, I don't know, like last week, you know, you would, you know, run up to a location at the venue, like if it was a sports event, and transmit back. And you saw your competitors go, so you would go too. Well, now you don't have to go to your car to transmit. You can, you know, transmit right from where you are. And that's pretty amazing because that just really speeds that information flow.
Mm.
You know, I think one of the greatest things about digital photography as we've moved from the old days of film is that you can see what you've shot right away. And it's that peace of mind knowing that you actually captured the image, that it's in focus, exposure is good. That alone is worth, you know, the early days of maybe lower quality digital images. But anymore, you know, as you mentioned, you know, prices were really expensive. And I think at the time I said, well, the lowest price camera I could find was a, you know, Barbie digital camera. And that was like, I don't know, $150. But now, you know, for $100, you know, $150, you can get a pretty amazing digital camera.
Over the holidays, I was visiting with my family, and I have a brother who has two little kids, and their oldest, I think, is probably like, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And one of his aunties gave him a Fisher-Price digital camera, and it was made... It was a gigantic thing.
Right, with a big viewfinder.
Yeah, with a big viewfinder. And it was made so that, like, I'm sure that you could throw it against the wall and it would be just fine. And it didn't take such a bad picture. And he took on to this, like, so quick.
Right.
And he was going over the windows and talking about, okay, now I'm going to do a nature shot. And then he wanted to get everybody all together for a big group portrait. And he was like off to the races, and we were all just really amazed. But so I guess there's now a camera for anybody.
I mean, that is absolutely true. And in fact, now that the manufacturers have the megapixel count of their image sensors up around 12 megapixels, you're starting to see the megapixel wars slow down. That by the time you're all up around 10 megapixels, you know, going to 14 megapixels is nice, but it's not like going from 2 megapixels to 10, you know. So what you're seeing is an expansion of features in other ways. So you are seeing shockproof cameras, you're seeing waterproof digital cameras, you're seeing, you know, freeze proof, you know, that you can go down to minus 10 degrees and have them still operate. You're also seeing things like high definition video, not just regular standard definition video, but high definition video getting into the point and shoot, you know, range of cameras. A number of the cameras, they're also including more of a wide angle view in the zoom range. So, you know, it used to be you could get sort of not much of a wide angle, just a little bit of a wide angle view. And now they're starting to realize, you know, we miss having that little bit wider angle view. So especially like if I was going to shoot something in here, it'd be nice to have something a little bit wider so I could get the microphones in you and the monitors and everything.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of callers here. We'll start in. Someone local first. Line one. And that's Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I take a lot of digital pictures, but I've never taken pictures of pages and book covers and this type of thing. And that's what I'd like to be able to do. So I guess I'm asking about... do I need a stand to place the written object in? Do I need special lighting? Book dust jackets is one thing I want to take pictures of. And I have lots of books for a certain author, and I want to document the dust jackets.
Sure.
And the main camera I use is a Panasonic. It's about a $300 camera. It does not have a... focus control on it. So I'll just kind of listen to your remarks in on that topic.
Okay, sure. You know, one of the things that's been really neat is that there are a number of reasonably inexpensive tripods that you can get. There are some that are basically just a tabletop tripod that, you know, they don't extend up, you know, 4 or 5 feet, but they're really just for setting on a tabletop or a, you know, bookcase shelf or something like that. For something like the dust covers, this would be the perfect thing. What I would try to do if I were shooting these dust covers is try to find a decent window in your house where there's decent light that comes through it, and you know, set up a, you know, TV tray or a coffee table. Coffee table would be better because it would be less likely to shake when you took the picture. But just have some nice light coming through. Probably have the book and the camera at a little bit of an angle to the light so the camera didn't cast a shadow on the cover. Mm-hmm. And try to have the camera and the book as parallel to each other as you possibly could. Many of the cameras have a close-up focus setting, so even though many of them you maybe can't manually focus, you can put in this macro focusing mode. And they do a really wonderful job focusing. Now, I don't know with the caller how much it matters if the lines are perfectly parallel on the book covers or if they get a little bit of a curve from more of a wide angle effect. If you don't mind a little bit of the wide angle effect, you know, the macro mode and the wide angle position of the zoom will give you decent focus. And, you know, it can tend to curve straight lines just a little bit on the outside edges of the frame. but really, this is fairly easy now. Trying to find, again, as I say, I would find a window with decent light. Try to use, if you can adjust the ISO setting, try to have an ISO set maybe around 100 or 200 and put it in the macro mode and shoot away.
Okay. I don't know. Is the caller still there? Did you want to
follow up? Yes. Follow up.
Sure. Yeah.
I do want to try and avoid the non-parallel line issue. I'm thinking I may put these pictures of the dust jackets on a website for other collectors to look at.
Sure.
So if I have curved lines, it does not look quite as
right.
nice.
Exactly.
Well, and maybe I need is there a stand I should buy to actually lock the camera and the book in place?
Right. I mean, I would definitely get some sort of tripod. And depending upon where you're setting up, you can get a pretty decent tripod kind of for very casual use for maybe $100 or so. There's a company called Manfrotto that used to be distributed here in the U.S. by Bogan, but they make a really nice, fairly inexpensive tripod. It's called the Moto 730, 785B is I think what it is. And if you can find one of those, usually mail order, you can get them for about, you know, $65. And for the smaller cameras, they do a pretty good job supporting what you're trying to do.
Could you spell that company?
Yeah, it's Manfrotto. And most of the mail order places, even, you know, Amazon will have it. And if you don't want the curved lines, what you can do is zoom so you're a little bit more of a telephoto range. And sometimes the problem is in the telephoto range, you can't focus in quite as closely, but that'll help stop with the curved lines when you're shooting up close.
Thank you.
Sure. Right, thank you. Our guest this morning in this hour, Focus 580, Brian Johnson. He teaches in the journalism department here at U of I, Urbana-Champaign, teaches photojournalism and has been a photographer for a long time. And every once in a while, he's here on the show. We talk about cameras and photography. So if you have questions about equipment, you have questions about technique, that's welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You may also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Over to an Indiana caller, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. This is Glenn. I had a question with regard to slides. I have 500,000 slides. I would like to put on a DVD.
Right, uh-huh.
What's the best way to go about doing that?
I think what I would probably do, well, there are a couple ways you can do it. One, you can buy your own slide scanner and do it yourself.
Uh-huh.
The prices of these scanners has come, you know, way, way down recently. So, I mean, you know, for $100, $150, looks like there are a number of different scanners that you could get. On up, you know, there are some that are, you know, $200, $300, $400, you know, even $1,000 if you're, you know, really spending a lot of money. The thing about it is it's somewhat slow to scan, you know, one slide at a time. So there are some commercial services out there that will do the scanning for you and, you know, put them on a CD. You're going to have to pay per slide then, but it would definitely be much quicker, and they probably have a higher quality scanner. So that might be a route you want to think about.
Uh-huh. That gets a little pricey or not?
Well, I think yes, it probably does, you know, especially you have, you know, quite a number of these. I'm looking at, I just did a Google search, and, you know, going from slides, it looks like up to 250 slides and, you know, for $90.
Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah. So if you do, if you do 5,000 slides, it looks like it's about $1,000. So, but again, I mean, it depends how much time you have and the kind of quality that you're looking for.
Right.
And, you know, how you're going to use the slides. If you really just want to scan them more to have almost like an index of the slides, you could scan them at a lower resolution. I'd hate to have you do that, though, because, you know, many times you'll think, well, I'm just going to scan these in so I have kind of a library, sort of a thumbnail view of all these pictures. And the next thing you know, boy, I'd really love to be able to just kind of make a digital enlargement from the scan. So so that's why I think having a decent resolution when you're scanning them is probably a good idea. So it's a question of time or money, really, when you really come right down to it.
Yes. Well, I noticed over a period of time, of course, with you know, the old 35-millimeter slides, some of them will tend to fade as far as colors, et cetera.
Right, exactly. You know, I always used to say on the show that the best way to maintain your images is never to look at them because, you know, then you keep them in the dark and keep them in a nice environment. Most of the slides, though, if they've been processed properly, will actually hold it better than a lot of the prints will. Color print, so you know, so it's a good thing that it's in slide form, and I do think you're on the right track, probably scanning them in some way. So it's just a matter of, you know, do you want to pick your absolute best ones and maybe scan them in yourself, or maybe you want to go the other way where you scan in more of what you have and have someone else do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking I can. Well, I know there's some companies that will. Even put background music with them and that sort of thing.
Right, exactly. You know, and what would be nice about that, you could choose a set of photos that all were, I don't know, family photos, and they could make almost like a little, you know, memory presentation out of it. So a lot of it does depend what you want to do with them, but they're going to have any number of services, and you'll be able to pay for whatever you want to have done. But the good thing is now is that the prices of having this done have, you know, it isn't exorbitant, really, when you think about what you're getting for how much you're paying for it.
Okay.
So right. I hope that
that's about the best way to, you know, kind of preserve slides over a period of time, is it not? Or?
I think it is, as long as you be sure that you... what's called migrate your data, so that if it's a, there are some CDs and DVDs that are archival, which means they'll last hopefully for at least 100 years. But if you copy everything onto a hard drive, you know, you want to be sure that that hard drive's backed up and that, you know, every couple of years you move it to a new hard drive. And so that the technology that you're connecting that hard drive to your computer is still active. So, for instance, in the old days, we used to use a connection that was called SCSI. But now, while SCSI is still out there as a connection, mostly now what you're seeing are USB and FireWire connections. So not only do you need to kind of move your data to a new medium every now and then, like from DVD to hard drive, but then also be sure that that technology for that medium is still active. So getting a hard drive that you can still connect to your computer, for instance.
Right. Okay. Now with that, isn't there programs where you could, say, put a CD in and then pull off, you know, certain slides to put together?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's
on a PowerPoint or something?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all actually fairly easy. And even there are a number of programs out there. If you yourself wanted to make a little slideshow and put it to music, that isn't really that hard to do either.
Okay. Right. Okay, very good.
All right, well,
great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Let's go on here. We'll talk next back here with someone local in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi, I've got a question and a couple of comments. The question, I was at the National Archives about 6 months ago and looking at an original pension, Civil War pension document. So I was in the special researcher's room where you have to have special IDs and this sort of thing. Not that hard to do, but anyway.
Sure.
Somebody there was, I just happened to see him as I was on my way out, and he was working with a tabletop stand. It looked to me, my recollection of it was that it was just had two legs, a wide stance, and he was able to sit, and he had his camera all set up, and he was photographing documents without having to stand up the way he might have had to with a tripod. And I cannot remember what I thought I would remember the name of this thing, and I have not been able to find it on the Internet.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering if it rings a bell with any of the listeners or with yourself.
Sure. Well, there are a couple different options for this. On quite a number of the tripods, what you can do is instead of the little center column going up from the top of the tripod, you can pull that center column all the way out and put it underneath the tripod. So that way you could, you know, just use the tripod that you have and have it point downward on whatever it is that you're trying to copy. What's also nice, if you're doing something like that, there are some cameras that have an articulated screen, so you can fold out the screen so that you could be seated down and still be looking at whatever you're photographing. Mm. So that's one thing. There are also a number of copy stands out there. And I know in some archives they'll have a copy stand on site, so you can bring your camera and put your camera on the copy stand that they have already on site at the archives.
Interesting. About 2-3 years ago now, we bought our first digital camera, and between the two of us shopping, we ramped up what we got to a Nikon D80, and the reason that we chose it over the next lower one was that it had the option of a remote. It had some other features, too, and I can't quite remember what they were. But since I'm the one who takes most of the pictures, especially when we're traveling, I end up not being in the pictures
very much. Right.
And I saw the mention of remote in one of photographer Nick Kelsch's books, which I really recommend to people. I don't know that they're in print anymore, but you can get them used. And he has some really good, very simple to read illustrated books on photography. And one of his last pictures in one of his books, he's got a picture of himself, and he had set up the camera on a tripod, and he's sitting, appearing to work on his computer, and he waited until a red bus came by. He's in some European country, and so he got himself with this nice, interesting background that he had to wait for. And it's really nice if you're going to family reunions and so forth, you can be in the picture
too,
and you can take multiple shots very easily, and you can get people to be more relaxed. You can set it up so that it can be on for various lengths of time. And although we spent what seemed like a lot of money on this camera, the camera in terms of cost per use is way, way, way down there because it's given us so much more flexibility. And the other thing is that I got about a year and a half ago, I got a Mac laptop. And it comes with iPhoto, or it came with iPhoto, and I think now there's a newer version of iPhoto available as part of the iLife program. And it is so easy to improve a photograph. It's very easy to crop and zoom in on the really interesting part of a photograph to make the photograph just come alive. It's easy to pull out, if a photo is too dark, to increase the exposure or decrease shadows. My husband's taken a course in how to use what's the Elements PC program? Photoshop Elements.
Right, Photoshop Elements, exactly.
And he just had his jaw drop open. He said, I can't believe you're doing that without even looking at instructions. And it just was very, very simple to use. And I put together a slideshow on the Mac with music of photos from a year and a half ago, and it was just so much fun. It took a little bit of work to get the music and all and the slideshow just the way I wanted it, but I didn't have to pay anybody to do it, and I had a lot of fun.
Right,
so
right.
I recommend those to anybody who has the wherewithal to do those things. It's been, I've just become a better photographer with Nick Kelsch, a good digital camera that gives me more options, and the iPhoto and the Mac. So there you are. Mm-hmm. And I'll look for some, I'll try to follow some of your suggestions on copying things. I now use, by the way, I now use my digital camera to make copies of some pictures. I have an old book from the 1890s that has a lot of photos of residences for one of the counties in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And so I indexed it, put it online at a genealogy website, and said that if I have time, people can request scans of the photos. But rather than risk damaging the book by putting it on a scanner, I now just take digital photographs
right.
of it. And I can enlarge, if there are people in it, I can zoom in and give people extra detail. It's been a lot of fun playing with this toy.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. You know, on the idea of the remote so you can be in your own photo, absolutely great idea. In this idea of, you know, marching forward with new features, two new features tied in with that. Some cameras have a feature where you get the whole family set up, you know, you're behind the camera. But then in this mode, when the camera senses an extra person come into the frame, it then takes the picture. Okay, so that's cool. Now, mm-hmm. even cooler than that, though, is that one where not only does it sense when you've come into the picture, but what when people are smiling, it has smile detections.
You're kidding
No,
me.
It's, you know, I haven't tried them to know how well it works, but yeah, they have smile protection. Some even have blink protection so that if you've, you know, blinked, it'll take another one right after that. So, you know, if people are interested in doing slideshows with sound, you know, a lot of the programs like iPhoto have that built in. There's also a program that's called Sound Slides, and there's Sound Slides and Sound Slides Plus. But if you just go to soundslides.com, it's basically a photojournalist who came up with this program, and he's, you know, just one single guy in his software company, but it's really easy to use, and you can even do things like put captions in your little sound slideshow and all that. Yeah. So,
well, that's it. Just hearing the listener talk, it really does make me think again about how now there are so many really easy to use tools so that people can do a lot of pretty sophisticated and advanced stuff.
Absolutely.
With images, still images, moving images, and put them together in different ways and do editing and do things that can improve them and put them in different forms and package them in different ways. And it's really, it might take a little practice. You know, you'd have to play with them, and it certainly doesn't help if there's some kind of good manual or instructional
right,
guide
right.
To help
well,
you.
You know, and the other thing is that a number of these products are coming with templates. So you don't even really have to design it. You can just, you know, some of them you just give it a group of photos and it'll, you know, kind of arrange it for you. And then you can adjust it, obviously, from there. But as far as getting started, yeah, there's so many tools that are so effective now that except for the time issue, there's almost no reason not to experiment.
We have some other callers. We'll get to them. Brian Johnson is our guest. He's a professor of journalism here at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. In fact, at the moment, he's the interim head of the Department of Journalism. He's a longtime photographer. Was a long time ago now, I guess, was a newspaper photographer for the News Gazette paper, and occasionally he's here. We talk about cameras and photography. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. On to another caller. This is someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
Yes. I make some furniture. Think of a desk or a hall table kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried to take photographs of them to sort of document what I've done, be able to show people. And I've never been satisfied with how they come out. They just don't look right. And my guess is you would have some suggestions for what I do, how I set it up to make them represent what I've actually done.
Sure. And when you say they don't look right, in what way? What about the way they look would you like to improve?
Right. Well, they don't look square.
Okay.
Or, you know, whatever, that
right.
sort of thing. And then I
right.
don't like the background.
Sure.
If I put it against a white wall, they look so stark that it's not interesting. If I put them against something else in the room, that detracts from the piece that I've made. That kind of thing.
Right, sure, okay. You know, and this type of photography is actually a lot more specialized than it seems like it ought to. So those really beautiful pictures that you see a lot of times are taken by people that really only shoot furniture. As far as the background goes, I would almost always try to avoid a white background, kind of like you found out they
right.
look really stark. And the white background, even though it's plain, can almost be distracting. Something that you could try to do is have maybe one corner of your own living room that you could sort of set up and almost like a little studio, but set up the perfect little scenario to highlight the furniture that you've made and show it in that. The curvy part of it, or where, you know, where it doesn't seem square, usually that's because the camera's in sort of its widest angle mode. So if you can do things where if you zoom in a little bit, which usually means you have to back up to get your whole furniture piece in, but zooming so you're in a slightly telephoto range will help things be square.
Okay.
Some of it will also depend on what angle you're shooting from. So if you're going to try to get the whole piece, if you can get sort of on the same plane with the whatever it is, so if it's like a...
Let's say a desk.
Yeah. So,
use an example.
Sure. So what I would do is try to shoot it in from a number of different angles, get down, you know, probably if a desk is normally, you know, 32 inches high, try to get down at maybe 20 inches high and shoot straight onto the desk.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would turn the desk on to its side and get the side of it. And then I would turn it at sort of a 3/4 angle and shoot it like that from that low angle. But then I would come up at sort of normal viewing height and shoot it. And if you're in that a little bit more of a telephoto range, or anyway, not in the really wide angle mode, that should help to give it a little bit more of a natural look.
Mm-hmm. And you're suggesting that one would then sort of keep one of each of these angles rather than trying to represent the piece with one photograph.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Yeah. I think that would be the best way, because it is really difficult a lot of times just with one photo to get a sense of that piece. So I think shooting a couple, and then kind of, you know, where you turn it on a little bit of an angle and shoot it, you know, mostly from the front, but a little bit of the sides in there, a little bit of the top. So you'd, you know, be up maybe
right.
at,
I gotcha.
Yeah, like 5 feet or so. Okay. So then the other thing is to pay attention to how the light is striking it. Usually with furniture, it's going to be a little bit of a mix where you're going to want kind of a nice overall light striking it, but then to have some sort of, it's almost like you could have a desk lamp off to the side kind of raking across the top of the desk so you get a sense of what the finish is like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're going to have lights like that, be sure that, you know, if it's going to be like an incandescent lamp that's kind of lighting the whole thing, get a couple of those sort of around the outside of the desk. And then if you're going to have like a desk lamp sort of, you know, raking across the top, be sure that that also has an incandescent bulb. So basically all the light is the same color.
Oh, okay.
Basically is
halogen what, and incandescent won't work together.
Well, halogen basically isn't incandescent, but it's a little bit brighter.
Right.
Brighter color. So you could sometimes mix that where you have kind of the overall lighting be in the incandescent and then have sort of a halogen light, you know, to give you that highlight across the top.
Okay. Thank you very much. Right. A number of suggestions that I can try.
Great.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
We have somebody here on cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My children, and I want to buy their father a camera for his birthday. We have, one of us plays an inordinate amount of soccer, so we were looking for a digital camera that would be able to do what it needs to do on a soccer field.
Right, right. What you're going to want to get for that, there's a class of kind of the point-and-shoot cameras that are called super zoom cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And Canon and Sony, Panasonic. I mean, most of the manufacturers have one that has a zoom that's somewhere between a 15x power and like some of them go to like a 24x zoom. So what that'll do, especially for soccer outdoors, it'll let you get in, you know, pretty close on the people that are out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So really that's what you're going to want to look for. As I say,
called a super zoom.
Yeah. Yeah. Normally what you can do is many times they might not be labeled as super zoom, but if you look at the zoom range,
mm-hmm.
Normally that's listed as something like 15x, 20x, you know, 24x. So the higher that number, it's basically the more of a telephoto effect that you'll get. So if you have a camera that's a 20x lens, in general, you won't be able to zoom in quite as tight as a camera that has maybe a 24x. But honestly, anything above a 15x zoom is really what you want to look for.
We were looking for, he's been the photographer for the family, has a wonderful eye, and this is the archive. We wanted a lifetime camera. We used to have one, but then everything's gone digital. So can you recommend, it doesn't have to be, I guess, a professional quality camera, but a fine camera.
Yeah, sure, sure. You know, if most of the kind of telephoto part is what you're going to be doing and that's going to be outside,
mm-hmm.
You know, people that have heard me on the show over the many, many years know that I mostly shoot with Canon cameras.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that Canon's the only one out there, but Canon has a PowerShot SX20. That's about, you know, $370.
That S as in Sam?
Yeah, S as in Sam, X as in X-ray, 20.
Mm-hmm.
That is a 20x zoom on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a camera that I use for my students in my multimedia class, and it's been
terrific.
Yeah,
that's
very
terrific.
Good.
And can you get the remote that the woman was talking about? That sounds like a great idea.
I'm not
sure.
Yeah, I think that these have a remote that you can get as an accessory. It doesn't come with it. A lot of the cameras actually used to come with a remote as part of the package, but now it's usually an add-on that you have to get.
And then I like to buy locally, but the Helix is gone.
Right.
Where can one get a camera?
Yeah, I mean, actually, do I want to say it's the cool thing? I mean, it is a cool thing. It's kind of sad that, you know, a local place like Helix went out of business, though, too. But if you go to Best Buy or Target, Walmart, even, you know, Staples, you know, the office supply stores, almost all of those places will have a pretty good range of these cameras. So, you know, Meijer, whatever.
I'm just going to go and ask for the SX20 Canon with remote accessory, and then I should be okay.
I think that's right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Are there, other than maybe in big cities, are there many independently owned camera stores anymore?
You know, no. I mean, honestly, there just aren't as many as there used to be. And some of it is that when photography moved from kind of the specialized hobby into more of a disposable, consumer-oriented world, I think that's really what changed it. When it went from film, where there was a lot that you needed to know to really perfect your skill, to where it was digital, and really the digital cameras are so smart that it isn't like you don't need to be as skilled as you used to possibly to get a well-exposed in-focus picture. Still, as we've talked about forever also, is that in many ways it's not the camera, but it's the person behind the camera. Yeah. And that for always is going to be the important thing. But what's really cool with the new digital cameras is that it's opened up the door to many people who maybe didn't have the technical mindset to wrestle with photography, with film, to people that are creative that maybe don't want to deal with that. Well, now the cameras will help them with that technical
You can take a really good picture pretty much just by pointing it and pushing the button.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, even the quality of the color and, you know, the tonality is all really good.
All right. About 10 minutes left here with Brian Johnson. He's here on the show once in a while. We talk about cameras and photography. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next up is Urbana line number 2.
Yes,
hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi. I'm looking for an efficient and relatively inexpensive way to transfer data. I have all of my baby videos on VHC.
Okay.
Not VHS, but VHC.
Right.
And I know that VHS had a housing where you could put the little tape into a big housing, make it a VHS, and then put it into a machine and you could dupe it. But I couldn't find a similar housing for VHC.
Right, right. Just as with a person that had all the slides that they wanted to duplicate, there are also a number of services out there where you can send in your tapes and they'll duplicate those and put them on DVD for you.
But that's quite expensive, and I've got probably, I don't know, maybe 40 or 50 of them.
Yeah. So the other thing is that there are a few kind of tape players that plug in via a USB connection to the computer. So if you're just looking to ingest things, that also might be a possibility. So just looking something up here and see what they might be able to find. But let me do a little bit of looking on that, you know, while we're going on here, and I'll come back on and let you know if
okay.
I found anything.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Right. I surely do want to preserve those. They're my entire memory bank.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Okay, thanks. Uh-huh. So the idea is that there would be some kind of a player that you could plug into your computer that then would download the images. And then presumably if you want to burn your own DVD, it's if your computer will
right,
do it, then you can
right,
make your
exactly.
own.
You know, there are turntables out there for albums that
sure,
you just
yeah.
plug directly into the USB. I've
yeah.
seen a VHS machine that sort of works the same way. And if what I'm thinking is correct, the VHC is the compact version where they had smaller tapes. And that could be a little bit more interesting to, you know, find something. But
yeah, but since there are the other things, chances are there probably is such a thing that
right, right,
to do that.
Right. I mean, and that's one of the things that's been great too, is that so many people have the content in a medium that's a legacy medium, as we like
to say.
That's a
nice way of putting it.
Legacy medium. That means not really used that much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so there are items out there. One thing that I'm looking at here, if the caller has a player that'll play her tapes back, there are some actually cables that'll convert from, you know, the video signal into a USB. I'm looking at a couple of them here, and they're between $15 and $40. So that might be an option if she can put the tapes in the camera that she has to play them out, or if she had a player herself in that format. She could plug in the plugs on one side of this cable and plug USB into yeah. the other side.
Okay. So maybe she's just going to need to do a little surfing and seeing what
yeah.
she can find.
And, you know, I just, what I typed in was VHS USB capture. And, you know, the video signal out is all going to be consistent. So if she has the player or the camera that she can still connect, that should that should work. If she needs to find a player yet too, you know, eBay's pretty amazing for that kind of stuff.
All right. We're trying to get in some other callers here and next talk with someone in. This is also Urbana, and this is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
You've already discussed the Canon XS20. I wanted to ask about that. You apparently are quite happy with it.
You know, it's we started out with, you know, the Canon, I think it was the S5, and then they came out with the SX10, and then the SX20 after that. There's also one higher up on this kind of, you know, super zoom or mega zoom range that's the SX1. But as I say, you know, Sony also has a number of cameras that has this sort of mega zoom. I know that Panasonic does. I think that Casio does. I mean, there are really a number of the manufacturers that have these. And even though I really like Canon and I've used it for a long time and had really good luck with it, it doesn't mean that these other manufacturers' cameras aren't every bit as good. So it, some of it depends on, that's what's great about having a local store, going into, you know, like your Best Buy or Target or whatever, and actually handling the camera and seeing if the menu structure, you know, how you get it, all the features, see if that menu structure of the camera makes sense to you. You know, seeing if it feels good in your hands and if the zoom controls work well. You know, those are the things that really matter, I think.
It's none of the digital zooms stopped down very far. I suppose that isn't as much of an issue with the smaller format as it was with the 35mm, but...
Right, you know, and actually, you know, what you're bringing up is an excellent point, that with many of these cameras, the thing that they don't really talk about is the fact that when it comes to f-stops, that's the way the lenses either let in more light or let in less light. They usually don't have a very good f-stop range. So with many of these cameras, they might have a widest f-stop of like 3.5. But then the smallest f-stop that they have is only f8. So there's not a very good range. The f-stop controls something that's called depth of field. So, you know, for people out there who don't know this, you know, the depth of field, if you wanted a nice out-of-focus background while you're doing a portrait of someone, you need a fairly large aperture size, a fairly large f-stop, like 2.8. If you want a great deal of your picture to be in focus, then you usually want to stop down, so f8, 11, f16. So we're sort of missing out on that a little bit. So, yes, that is a problem really with almost all of the kind of the consumer grade or serious amateur grade cameras, is they don't really have a very good range of aperture settings.
I do mostly pictures of plants, and I usually like to focus wide open, and I prefer to use a longer lens or use a telephoto range of a zoom.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and that's an excellent way to shoot flowers, because then you can kind of center in on one of the blooms and have a sense of the other flowers being there, but not have the other ones in the background be so overpowering that it takes away the beauty of the one that you're focusing on. But that's what's cool about a lot of these cameras with the macro mode that they have, is that you can use them in a little bit of a telephoto setting in that macro setting and really get the kind of pictures that you've described.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana Line 3. This is our next caller. Hello. To caller there, Line 3.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like your comment on the construction of cameras today. I have a relatively elderly Fuji camera, and the battery door is plastic and cracked.
Right, right.
Is this a fairly common problem?
Yes. You know, and it is something else to look at. I have some of the Canon cameras, some of the other cameras that I've seen, and you know, some of them might have a battery door that's not designed very well.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might have particularly, you know, susceptible corners to damage.
Yeah.
So, again, that's what's nice about being able to go somewhere, look at the camera, because you can sense a little bit of, you know, what the build quality is.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side of that, you know, most of them are actually fairly durable, even though they're plastic. They can, you know, take a little bit of, you know, getting knocked off a coffee table. but yeah, it isn't like it used to be when we had cameras that were, you know, metal.
Real metal.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the pro cameras now, they'll have like a, you know, a composite outside shell so that they might have a magnesium inside skeleton for it, but then a composite shell. Those can hold up actually fairly well, but uh-huh. You have to pay more for those cameras, and that's partially why.
I suppose by mail order you can get replacement parts?
I wouldn't be surprised. Now, normally with things like the doors and that,
yeah.
It's hard to detach the old one and then reattach the new one. So, so that's something that you can look at. And it's a little bit of the sad thing with the technology as it's become cheaper and cheaper that usually people, you know, if something breaks, unfortunately, they go look for a new one instead of trying to fix it.
I must jump in here. My apologies to the caller and also one person we just can't take because we've run out of time. I'm sure, though, in a couple months, maybe Brian will come back and we can do it again.
Sure.
Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Brian Johnson, he's professor of journalism, interim head of the Department of Journalism at the U of I, longtime photographer. Every once in a while, he's here on the program, and we talk about cameras and picture taking.